Last Word on Today FM.
Time to talk about what's going on in America with Marion McKeown. And first, Cal Thomas, how well do you think are your government's negotiations with the Iranians going about a peace deal?
I think they're going nowhere, Matt. And as I've written about in my column, I think we're making a false bargain with the devil. I mean, here's Vice President Vance, who is almost taking the Iranian side's word. He does say that actions are more powerful than words, but we've heard this before. The Iranians are very good at playing what I call, or the late Muhammad Ali called rope-a-dope, of extending things out. We got this 60-day moratorium or whatever it is. And then Vance says that the Iranians have agreed to allow IAEA inspectors in. Now, the last time they did that, the inspectors got rolled. The only way this will work is if Americans are part of that IAEA group. But I doubt seriously the Iranians are going to let them in. Look, they haven't changed their death to America, death to Israel, death to the infidels mantra. And I think they're just stringing us along. And the administration, of course, wants some kind of a deal so they can claim lower gas prices, lower grocery prices, and try to stem a loss in the November elections.
Of course, maybe J.D. Vance should have read The Art of the Deal by some fella called Donald Trump to know how to do it. But there's a serious point here. Hasn't actually America handicapped itself as well in getting rid of experienced negotiators and instead sending Donald Trump's chums to do the job instead?
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt, and I think you're absolutely right. Thankfully, we have Marco Rubio, who I think is the star of all of this. He is the most articulate. He is the most knowledgeable. He has experience in foreign affairs. He certainly came from Cuba to the United States with his family as a young man. And I think he should be the chief negotiator, not a drop-in by the vice president who just comes in, does some media interviews, shows up on American TV and declares almost peace in our time, like Neville Chamberlain. I am very, very doubtful that this is going to work out to the advantage not only of the United States, but of the world.
Of course, Marion McKeown, if and when this fails, it won't be Trump's fault, will it? It'll be somebody else's.
Well, he already made that perfectly clear, Matt, when he said, of course, if it succeeds, I'll take all the credit, and if it fails, I'll blame J.D. Vance. So J.D. Vance can't say he wasn't warned. But, you know, I agree completely with Cal, but I would actually go a step further, because what the Iranians are in line to get is $300 billion in reconstruction dollars, another $100 billion in unfrozen assets, and another $80 billion from oil sales that they will now be allowed to do without any kind of sanctions. That's $500 billion. And what do they have to do in exchange for that? All they have to do is reopen the Strait of Hormuz, which was open before the war started, and agree to let back in the IAEA inspectors who were there, and there were some there even a couple of weeks ago, but they were certainly there last year until the 12-day war when the US and Israel went in and bombed the facilities. So they're getting all this for basically just going back to where they were before, and it just seems like the world's worst deal. And look, J.D. Vance's instructions are clear. He's been told by Donald Trump, get out there and make this thing look like a win. You know, say what you have to say, do what you have to do. And Cal, just in terms of what you said about Marco Rubio, I certainly wouldn't have as high opinion of him as you have, but Marco Rubio ran from this. He was like a rat off a sinking ship. He wanted nothing to do with these. He wasn't going to have his name on it. He's cannier. You know, they're both equally ambitious, J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio, but Marco Rubio is slightly wilier, and he saw what was coming, and he just went, I'm away from this. Now, he is going to meet a couple of the Middle Eastern states, but his name and his fingerprints will not be on this deal. And you know what? If it succeeds, and I don't know how you define success, but let's just say that the war does stop. Let's just say that Israel does stop bombing Lebanon and that there is a period of relative stability in the Middle East. I think we'd all welcome that, but it's undeniable that Iran is emerging as the undisputed winner.
Now, let's move on to what is distracting a lot of people in the United States from what's going on in the Middle East at present, the reflecting pool in Washington. Now, this is the pool that runs up to the Lincoln Monument or the Lincoln Memorial, and it runs down towards the White House. It's all part of Trump wanting to tart up Washington ahead of the celebration of 250 years of the country, which he is very much going to take over, I think, the celebrations next week. So this reflecting pool, Cal, before we get into what has been done to it, just how significant a landmark is it in Washington?
Well, I think most people will remember, if they're old enough, or certainly if they've seen films, the late Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech right on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial facing the reflecting pool. Younger people might remember that it was shown in the movie Forrest Gump, where Jenny jumps into the pool and runs toward Forrest and embraces him during an anti-war demonstration. But it is a beautiful, beautiful pool. Now, five people have been arrested so far for allegedly vandalizing the pool. Trump claims that it was all made beautiful by him, a nice blue color, took out all the algae and everything else. What apparently he doesn't realize is that in the summertime, especially in Washington, but in any warm climate, standing water tends to produce algae. That's just a fact. It's a biological fact. But he claims now that somebody took something like a box cutter and sliced 100 yards or whatever it was, 50 yards across the bottom of the pool and ruined it. So he's got people going back in there at greater cost to drain it again and to do it again. Now, I don't doubt that there are people who would like to do this, who hate Trump. But on the other side, he really has reinstituted fountains and gotten graffiti off a lot of statues and really beautified the town a lot more. So I give him credit for that. But I'm not sure I believe the vandal part. We'll see if these guys go to court.
Well, on that particular angle, Marion McKeown, it seems rather extraordinary. It's a 250-foot cut he has actually alleged has taken place. Now, I don't know how people would have unobserved gotten into the water and managed to quickly cut 250 feet along in a line on the floor of this reflecting pool. And of course, the paint is peeling off it and is coming to the surface. And the people who've been arrested for allegedly vandalizing the pool say they were just merely pulling out bits of the peeled off paint. This is quite an utterly extraordinary, isn't it, Marion? Because people are getting arrested for vandalizing the pool, whereas if they went and vandalized Capitol Hill on the 6th of January, 2021, they got pardoned for it.
Yeah, they would have nearly been in line for $1 million payout for their trouble as well, each if Trump had got his way with his slush fund. But anyway, Cal, I agree completely. I think who wouldn't applaud somebody for making the city look beautiful? Washington is a magnificent city, and I don't know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been there, but it really is beautiful. And the reflecting pool and where it is situated and the proximity to the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument and all these things, it is absolutely gorgeous. Well, it was, sorry. And now you've got dead ducks lying around who've been, I assume, poisoned by all the gallons and gallons of bleach that were poured into it. And you've got a whole bunch of other stuff. But for Trump, for starters, there are cameras everywhere. There are security cameras everywhere in Washington. If somebody had gotten in, even if they had snorkeled, and they might have had to snorkel, the thing's only a couple of inches deep, for God's sake, it wouldn't even come up to your knee. So they would have had to get in there and either in broad daylight or under cameras or under security at night, have slit at 350-foot was Trump's latest assessment of it.
Oh, it's getting bigger, like everything with Trump.
Yeah, no surprise there. and then get out unmolested and unseen by anyone. As for the people who have been arrested, it's absolutely ludicrous. One of them is a guy called David Hearn. He was a former Olympic rowing, represented America in the Olympics as a rower, was cycling by, said he has a company, a water sealing company of his own, and he looked at it. There was a piece of rubber that had come, or a piece of the the base, whatever the base they'd put in it, that had come loose. He apparently held it to feel what it was like and was arrested for that. I mean, it's, and is being charged for that. Now, he's got an excellent lawyer in Norm Eisen, who was George Bush's, I believe he was his ethics czar, and he was in the Obama White House. This is going to go nowhere fast. And another five people, including a woman who was, she thought she was taking a piece of litter out of the pool. It was a piece of blue paint chip that was floating on top, and she's been arrested and charged. It, you know, we laugh, but that is actually sinister.
But sorry, Marion, the big thing here, the big thing is actually the amount of money that was sold for, or the amount of money spent on contracts for Trump's mates. Mm. And this looks like a complete ready-up, another grift.
Well, one mate in particular, and I don't know if anybody has seen the pictures of him, he looks like something out, an extra out of Bugsy Malone. He's like a caricature of a mafia don. And he got, his company's called, ironically, the Greenwater Company, so he certainly fulfilled that mandate. And now they're draining it and they're going to do the whole thing again. But yeah, it was supposed to cost $1.6 or $1.8 million. We're now up to $16 million. It's an absolute mess. And it's, you know what, it's not the algae, because as Carl said, that can happen in the summer. It's certainly happened before many times on the reflecting pond, but it's the fact that all this, the coating that they put on has all bubbled up and it's come loose and it's floating around the surface, and their remedy has, we don't know if it's their remedy or if it was the paint, but wildlife are being killed who are in the pool, which is also awful. And you know, and again, all Trump can do is blame other people, blame, you know, this conspiracy of vandals who are trying to destroy his reflecting pool. It's the whole thing is embarrassing, and it's, you know, it should have been a project that was done properly and that it should look beautiful, but now it's a mess.
Let's move on and let's hear Tucker Carlson announcing that he's leaving the Republican Party.
How could I or any American voter support a political party that's not loyal to the United States, that puts the interests of a foreign country above those of its own citizens? Like, it's not possible to vote for people like that. And I'm not going to. And I think I voted Republican my entire life. I worked at Fox News, CNN, right, MSNBC. I've been a consistent defender for 35 years of the Republican Party. I mean, very consistent defender. But there's no defending this because it's immoral. And it's exactly the opposite of what a political party in a democracy is charged with doing.
And of course, former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene has also announced she's leaving the party. What do you make of this, Carl?
Good riddance, says the mayor of Seattle, who is a left-wing socialist, said about rich people leaving the city because of high taxes. Tucker Carlson is not fooling anybody. He's talking about Israel. He's turned into an anti-Semite. And I just think that, first of all, Israel produces a lot of things that are good for the United States, namely intelligence. I mean, I think that, after the Holocaust, the reestablishment of Israel in its ancient territory in 1948, the recognition of it, that we were the first to recognize it under President Harry Truman, a Democrat, I don't think Tucker Carlson is going to have any great influence on other Republicans. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, as we have discussed before, one of your favorite now former congresspersons, Matt, I think she's out there on the fringe, too. So I don't think they're going to have much of an impact. The media will make a big deal out of it for a day or two, and then they'll move on to something else.
Well, I never thought I'd ever be in a position where I would actually have to defend Tucker Carlson. But I'd have to say to you, Cal, that just because you're anti-Israel doesn't mean you're an anti-Semite.
Yeah, well, that's an old thing.
No, I would take thing. That, I would take
they
that
go,
very seriously.
Together. No, you're not going to find anybody who says they're the opposite of that, Matt. It all goes together. And it has for many, many years. Carlson, when he talks subliminally about a foreign influence and all of these other words that are used by people who hate Israel and hate the Jewish people, you're seeing the same thing on American college campuses. You're seeing it also among the traditional anti-Semites in this country. You're seeing it in Europe among the anti-Semites there. You would think that they would have learned their lesson from the run-up to World War II, but they haven't. It is a growing problem, not only in the United States, but in many parts of the world.
Cal, I'm just going to repeat again, you can like and admire Jewish people, and at the same time, you can also say that the actions of Israel in what they've been doing in Gaza and Lebanon are wrong. And to say that what Israel is doing is wrong, it is then wrong to be labeled an anti-Semite for saying so. Yeah.
That's the two go together too often, Matt. And Israel is the only nation on earth right now that I'm aware of that continues to be a target for elimination by its enemies. And that goes for Hezbollah, Hamas, and all of these, and Iran, and other terrorist groups. They are attacked as a nation. They're attacked as a people. You look at what's happening on American college campuses, the anti-Semitism, which is rampant in classrooms and on the streets. And I don't see how you can separate the two, but clearly you have.
Yeah, I stick to my position just as you'll stick to yours. And
fine.
I want to go to Marion on this because you and I have discussed Tucker Carlson before. There's a terrific book which was published earlier this year about him. It's called Hated by All the Right People. And he does come across as a bit nuts in it. But it is fair to say, I think, isn't it, Marion, no matter what we might think of his politics and his ability to stir things up, he is a significant voice. And some people think he's trying to position himself for a run at the presidency in the future.
First of all, I do think Tucker Carlson is an anti-Semite. I agree with Cal on that. And I think Marjorie Taylor Greene certainly has expressed some very anti-Semitic sentiments. But I absolutely agree with you, Matt, that Benjamin Netanyahu, and I single him out, and his extreme colleagues in the cabinet on the far right, have managed to so successfully conflate criticism of the barbarity that they have carried out in Gaza and their absolute breaching of Lebanon as a sovereign state and pushing 1.2 million Lebanese out of their homes and destroying their homes and villages. And they've managed to try and make it so that if you dare to criticise that and call it what it is, you are labelled an anti-Semite. And that is completely wrong. It's a totally different thing to be critical of Netanyahu and those far-right extremists, those brutes, and those people who are terrorising Palestinians with their settlements, and to be an absolute supporter of Jewish people and of Israel's right to exist. To me, I can't see what the confusion is there. They're two totally separate things. But I think you're right about Carlson. He is itching to get into the arena as a presidential candidate. He may consider he runs an independent. He's such a charlatan, I wouldn't even be surprised if he tried to run as a Democrat. He's quite like Trump in that he craves publicity. He craves being relevant. He craves being in the frame. And he's managed to monetize it very, very successfully since he got kicked out of Fox News. But he is becoming less relevant because there was a thing when Marjorie Taylor Green left, people thought, oh, she'll still be a voice. Well, no, she isn't. She's now pretty much irrelevant. Tucker Carlson is veering that way. I think he has a better ability to keep himself in the conversation than she does because he's much more skillful and he's a much more skillful communicator. But we haven't seen the last of him by a long shot.
Okay. Can you tell me a little bit, please, Marion, about whether we're going to have another Kennedy in American politics, albeit under a different name?
Oh, well, you know what? I'm going to say no, and I may be just proven wrong tomorrow, and I'll have to do a big apology next week. No, you know what? This race, it's in District 12 in New York, which was where I used to live when I lived in New York, and it's a big district in New York. It's actually quite a wealthy district, not my bit of it, but it's got four people. There are about 50 people on the ballot, but there are four people who are significant, and Jack Schlossberg, who is, of course, John F. Kennedy's grandson, the only surviving male line in that particular line of the family, and he decided he was going to run. And earlier this year, he threw his hat into the ring. He's got quite a big online profile, but he's got fewer than a million followers, which isn't really that big when you look at some of the other influencers online. I think he's a bit of a clown and a bit of an idiot, quite frankly. I don't see that he's got anything to qualify him for the job. He does, you know, he has posted some things that are quite amusing and some are just downright stupid. But the point is, he's 33, 34. He's never had a job. He worked for Vogue as a columnist he submitted about 7 or 8 pieces. He sort of faffs around at Democratic campaigns and events, but he's never held a job. If you compare his CV to Zoran Mandami's, who was the same age when he ran for mayor, he's only a year older than him. I mean, it's chalk and cheese. And likewise with Alex Borres, who is one of the contenders for the same position. He's in a New York State Assemblyman. He's also he was a software engineer. He worked for Palantir. He's somebody that the Congress could really use in writing AI regulations. And then there's another guy called Mika Lasher, who's been a state assembly person for years, knows New York, knows his way around, you know, writing legislation and stuff like that. I think they would be better choices.
Okay, well, let me finish with Cal. But does America always love the idea of a Kennedy ahead of necessarily better qualified people?
Well, I think the candidacy of Schlossberg represents and will represent, as he if he loses, and I think he will, the death of Camelot. You have another couple of generations now since the Kennedy years. I mean, I remember his great attractiveness. I remember where I was on election night in 1960 in my dorm room at American University. And a lot of us were able to identify with him as a young, vigorous man and of great personality and ability to communicate. His news conferences were classic. They were funny. They were profound. They were very well attended and watched on television. So that era has passed, I think, and we're on to something else. And yeah. I don't think the Kennedy name by itself is going to attract voters as it did in the past.
Thank you very much, Cal Thomas, Murray McKeown.
The Last Word on Today FM.